right. Good morning, everybody. And let me also reiterate the thank you and the welcome that Nick just provided. My role is to simply to introduce our keynote speaker. When we put together the event, we thought about who would be somebody well-known in the industry that I think everyone would enjoy listening to and hearing from. And we picked Tom Edelman. Tom probably is well-known to virtually everyone in the room. For those who are not, Tom has been a perpetual entrepreneur in the industry. He founded Snyder Oil, I think was his first company, which later was sold to Santa Fe. Founded Lomac Petroleum, which is now Range Resources. Founded Patina Oil and Gas, which was later sold to Noble Energy. Founded Bearpaw Energy, a midstream company, which was then later sold to Northern Border. And I'm sure I'm forgetting quite a few companies that he's founded and sold and taken public in between. But most recently, he's teamed up with a longtime friend and partner of his, Ben Gwill, and they are now the managing partners of White Deer Energy, who are on Fund 2 and getting ready for Fund 3 for their private equity. So a great friend of the industry, great friend of mine. And with that, Tom, I'll turn it over to you.
And thank you all, ladies and gentlemen, and good morning. Let me start, if I could, just by saying how pleased I am to be here as a guest of Baird and Curtis and Frank Murphy, Shell, who have been very long-standing associates. As you might have gathered from the introduction, I've had serious trouble holding a job for any long period of time, had to keep moving, and throughout. Curtis and his associates and Baird have been great friends and supporters. The other people I just want to mention briefly, as Curtis mentioned, I have the pleasure of sitting on the board of Noble Energy, which I merged Patina into, I think, 10 years ago now, and John Bookout and Chris Hickman are here and will be presenting later, who've done a brilliant job. They've promised me they're going to get Noble parent stock to perform as well as their and Curtis' work has done in Noble Midstream. So delighted to be here. If I could, to begin, it's a little late in the cycle to do this, but I thought I'd take the liberty of repeating one of my favorite oil industry stories that's particularly appropriate when you're in the real doldrums of these cycles we all seem to live through. It's late one evening in Houston, and two ladies of the night are walking down the street commiserating about the fact that business is a bit slow when they spot a small frog over by the curb. And they approach a bit closer, and the frog says, "Rawr, pick me up and kiss me, I'll turn into a Texas oil man." And one of the ladies begins to reach down to pick up the frog, puckers up to give it a kiss, when the other lady grabs it and shoves it in her purse. First lady says, what are you doing? The frog said if you kissed him, he'd turn into a Texas oil man. Second woman says, "Damn, talking frog is worth a hell of a lot more than a Texas oil man." Anyway, it feels a bit better. That would have been a lot more appropriate about 9 or 10 months ago. We all went through a very violent cycle. Ben and I like to tell our friends and associates that this is the sixth crash we've gone through in our career, so there doesn't seem to be any sign that an industry that's been cyclical all the way back to John D. Rockefeller is going to change anytime soon. It's not a surprise that we have the cycles, but speaking certainly for myself, one is always surprised by the power and depth of just how violently and quickly it can strike. The only real lesson that we have taken out of this, since we've never learned to properly anticipate them, sometimes the direction, but never the duration or the depth, is that the one thing that kills companies in this industry is debt. And we managed to lose a company or two out of our portfolio because they had leverage. The only thing, if you look back through these cycles, that is a common theme is those who play with leverage on the upside do brilliantly, on the downside get wiped out. And that certainly was true again this time. So where are we now as we come out of this? From our perspective, the industry moved on a dime on April 1st of last year, almost a year ago now. For the prior 20 months, not only had the industry been retrenching sharply and losing money rapidly, you couldn't get transactions done. It was very hard to meet with and strike any kind of deal with someone who explained to you that their company had been worth $500 million just 1 year earlier, and you, because they liked you, they were willing to transact at $250 million when their company on a commodity-adjusted basis was perhaps worth 100. And it was very, very hard to get anything done. Between April 1st of last year and year-end, in our case, we deployed $850 million in approximately 10 transactions, having gotten virtually nothing done for the prior year and a half. And we are convinced that there is a golden opportunity, not because of wonderful things that are happening, although there's some of those, but simply as the rubber band springs back from having been stretched to the negative so far. The underlying thing, as I like to go through with our fellow investors, is that the United States has won the lottery. When I got out of school and entered the oil business, it was, as it had always been, a great business, but it was a full consensus that it was an industry in decline. Individual companies could do extremely well in this gigantic business that we all work in and around. But every year there was less production, there were fewer employees, and there was no concept, at least that I was aware of, for the first 20 years of my career that this could turn around. But the advent of shale drilling, of the sophistication that couldn't have been done without computers, of the horizontal drilling and the fracking, completely rejuvenated the U.S. industry. And the combination of our good fortune and our geology, where the whole center of North America is populated with many, many formations that are and always have been known to be laden with hydrocarbons, you just couldn't extract it on any economic basis. And that has changed radically. When you combine that with the fact that we are the only country, to my knowledge, where the mineral rights pass with the land, has allowed us to have an industry that's enormously fragmented, with 12 to 15,000 operators and hundreds of thousands of mineral rights owners, so that there can be a constant testing of all different kinds of theories. And when you put those two pieces together, very fortunate geology and a wildly fruitful system of mineral rights and the ability to lease to private companies, you have endless experimentation. And the results have been staggering. In the last 2 years, I'd venture to say that the productivity, the capital productivity of the oil and gas industry has been growing at a compound rate of somewhere between 25 and 30% a year. That is much more akin to what many of us grew up with microprocessors than it is an old industry like oil and gas or timber or steel. Now, some of that is masked by the collapse in service prices. And my view and my partner's view is that what has begun with the frac spreads and the frac sand is going to gradually spread to virtually all, if not all, of the sectors of the oil service business. So if we had to guess, when you go forward somewhere between 1 and 2 years, The reduction in service costs, just sheer man hours and equipment, that probably at the depths of the recession in the industry were down 20 or 25%. It looks to us like that will go all the way back to where it started. It's not going to happen immediately, but it certainly looks to us, and someone last night at dinner was relaying a story that I've started to hear with our portfolio companies more and more. You call Halliburton, who used to beg for business, and they tell you they can schedule a frack for you in June. The industry has not had the ability, certainly not the facility, to rapidly reemploy people and deploy equipment, certainly not with experienced crews. And the result is that you're getting premium prices paid more and more for frack, and I think, as I say, it's going to spread through the industry. So I think the E&P side of the business, where I spend most of my time, is going to fight the headwind of rapidly rising service costs. Everyone I've heard speak on the subject, I think, underestimates how rapidly it will spring back. But the productivity is permanent. We are just getting and continue to get better and better at exploiting the hydrocarbons that are locked underground. And the long-reach wellbores, the intensity of the fracks, the spacing of the fracks, and I think from my experience out in the DJ Basin when we were building Patina, that over time the industry will get to refracks and probably ultimately trifracks of these reservoirs, and therefore that there is an opportunity for the productivity to change. So the break-even levels, the profitability levels of the industry are probably far, far stronger than they were when we were at $100 a barrel. I've heard estimates from some of my friends in the research business that if oil gets back to a $70, perhaps a $75 level ultimately, you will at that level have the same or greater productivity that you did at 100 or 110 because of these dramatic increases in productivity. So our view is that we are facing a brief, probably, but a golden age in our business, in many of your business, in the MLPs, because along with this vast increase in productivity, the plumbing of the United States is and will need to continue to be, I think, for a certainly 10, maybe 20-year period of time, rebuilt and expanded as we draw oil and gas from places that either have not historically been major producers or, like the Permian, have been traditional producers, but never in the volumes and the intensity that you're starting to see now. So we think the opportunities are vast. What will go wrong? Well, two things, as we always do and our brethren in the real estate business always do, we will cumulatively at some point probably get overexcited and create the next full boom and the inevitable follow of a turning down. The keynote to that will probably just be global growth. The thing that is fixing now, or looks to be fixing, the supply glut we lived with in oil is, yes, of course, the Saudis and the others curtailing production. But most importantly and most fundamentally, because cartels tend to break down, is a steady increase in demand of 1 to 1.5 million barrels of oil a year. If that continues, and certainly if it accelerates, I at least am confident that you will see $70 oil, perhaps sooner than expected, but certainly over the next year or two. Gas, unfortunately, is far more troublesome. Gas, we probably have had even more dramatic discoveries on a relative basis because of opening up the Marcellus and Utica along with a number of the other basins. And then, of course, just for God to take revenge on the oil industry, we've now had two winters that didn't come. And I at least believed when we entered 2017 that gas was poised to sit in the high threes, maybe even reach four or a bit above. And I believe if we had had normal weather in January and February, we would have had that. We certainly would have had winter prices in or around the four area, maybe summer prices in the 350, 360 area. Instead, here we are, the end of February, beginning of March. We had prices lose more than a dollar, I think, in a six-week period of time. We're now back down in the upper twos, and that is going to be very challenging for the development, not of the largest wells in the Marcellus and Utica and some of the other places, but as you spread out to the Barnett, to the Haynesville, to lots of other areas around the country, those are very difficult, if not impossible, numbers, even with the productivity increases to make money at. So without help from winter, and much of our gas demand is still heating demand, it's going to take at least several years for electrical generation, petrochemicals, other uses of natural gas, and exports through LNG and pipelines to Mexico to catch up with that glut. So we think there's going to be some great opportunities in gas. We are pursuing several of them ourselves, but there is no question that the industry consensus that oil is easier is proving out given the weather conditions. So finally, before wrapping up, how does the MLP sector look to me? As Curtis knows, one of my few claims to fame was that I set up and partially financed with Curtis's help the second MLP in the United States, Snyder Oil Partners, way back in 1981. And Snyder Oil Partners, along with all of the originators, really invented by Ray Plank of Apache as a way to get rid of his old tax shelter partnerships, consolidating them into a publicly traded vehicle. None of us survived the long-term decline in the 1980s. All of those companies, including ourselves, if they didn't die, had to convert over to C Corp so that they could retain what cash flow in a bad environment they had. We ended up being very lucky and making very high multiples of our investors' money for them in the form of a C Corp taking advantage of that decline. But none of the original production MLPs survived. They then morphed over into being a vehicle principally for midstream, certainly a more appropriate product because of the predictability of the margin, certainly relative to production. And now, of course, all of you play a critical role in a gigantic market, both by number and capitalization. So what are the threats and opportunities, at least as we see them, and we've looked at a couple of MLPs who are struggling capital-wise because of the downturn. The biggest opportunity by far, it seems to us, is in this replumbing of the United States. You certainly didn't expect the northeastern United States to be exporting gas, and that's going to require giant changes in the way gas is moved, processed, et cetera. It's underway. It takes a very long time for it to take effect. The challenges, on the other hand, is that the field is so crowded. It continues to get pushed into more and more areas, many of which are riskier, certainly, than the big transportation pipelines that formed the backbone of the business for many years. And for the first time in what is probably 25 to 30 years, putting aside some bumps, the yield curve certainly seems to be far more likely to rise than fall. We've had an environment for as far back as I at least can remember where you have a secular decline in rates in the United States and almost everywhere around the world. That is very unlikely in my view to continue, and it's going to provide some competition that the MLPs and the REITs have enjoyed as people fled everything from CDs through treasuries looking for some amount of yield that they can live on or contribute to their lifestyle out of their savings. So it won't be as much a free shot, I don't think, as it's been over the last 25 years or so. It's going to take very good judgment as to which MLPs and which business structures long-term make sense. The deals that Kinder and now more recently ONEOK are engaging in are, in my view, horrific, totally designed to destroy value because of tax payments to their individual investors, but clearly to the benefit of management and the parent company's stock holding. That also is going to be a threat, and I would not be surprised if those aren't sooner or later outlawed in some form or another as a clear breach of fiduciary duty to the very investors who fueled the growth of MLPs. So it won't be a path that's uncluttered. We strongly suspect that the entire industry and the security markets for all segments of the industry, midstream, upstream, and service, are likely to flourish for the next 2 to 3 years, mostly because of the recovery from the devastation of the last 2 years, but also because of the benefits of this increase in productivity that will make more and more producing areas profitable and attractive. So I think we're going to have a brief but very enjoyable golden age to at least in part compensate us for what we lived through in the prior 2 years. And so we at least are very much looking forward to this. We hope all of you do as well, and that collectively we will recover, if not exceed, the pain and suffering of the last 2 years. Thank you all very much.